She walked into a hotel for a party and never came out. Nearly 24 hours later, 19-year-old Kenneka Jenkins was found dead in a freezer. The police called it an accident. But the internet, they saw something else. Cover-ups. Deleted footage. A silent hotel hiding too many secrets. Told through the eyes of her best friend, this raw, first-person true crime audiobook exposes the truth they tried to bury, and the justice that refused to stay frozen. This is The Freezer Death Conspiracy. A story of grief, obsession, and the fight to make her name impossible to forget. Welcome to the Murder Tape Chronicles audiobook. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you The Freezer Death Conspiracy, a true crime audiobook experience. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. The Night That Swallowed Her Whole. You ever watch someone slip away, and you don't even realize it until it's too damn late? I didn't know that night would haunt me for the rest of my life. If I had, I would have paid more attention. I would have held her hand a little tighter, looked into her eyes a little longer, told her not to go to that fucking party. But hindsight's the cruelest thing life offers. It plays you like a reel of all the things you could have changed, if you only knew. It was September 8th, 2017. A Friday. I remember the sky being bruised purple as the sun dipped beneath the horizon. We were feeling ourselves, me, Kenneka, Moan, and Bree. We were all dressed up, not even for no reason, just because. Kenneka had on this slick denim jacket over a crop top that hugged her just right, and her hair was straightened bone straight. She looked bomb. Like always. She had this energy that made people gravitate toward her, bright, bubbly, with that low-key attitude that said, "Don't fuck with me unless you mean it." We weren't supposed to go to the Crown Plaza that night. Originally, it was supposed to be a chill kickback at Mona's cousin's place. But plans shifted quick when we got that text. Room 926. Bring a bottle. That was the vibe. Hotel party, mixed crowd, music loud, maybe some weed in the air, maybe some dudes we used to flirt with back in high school. Innocent shit. Or at least it felt that way. We pulled up to the Rosemont Crown Plaza around 11:30 p.m. The lobby was clean, sterile. That white tile and soft jazz playing from somewhere invisible. Security barely looked at us. Just four young black girls walking through like we belonged. And we did, kinda. We were used to navigating spaces that weren't exactly made for us. The elevator up to the 9th floor smelled like pine cleaner and sweat. Someone had already been partying. We stepped out, heels clicking on the thin carpet, and found room 926 at the end of the hallway. Kenneka knocked twice with the back of her hand and flashed that mischievous grin like she already knew she was the baddest one in there. The door opened, and the noise hit us like a wall. The room was already packed. People sitting on the beds, others standing near the window smoking blunts. The little kitchenette full of red Solo cups and Crown Royal bottles. I remember someone had brought Hennessy, and it was being passed around like communion. The air was thick with smoke, laughter, bass-heavy music, and heat. That kind of heat that sticks to your skin and makes you feel like you're spinning before you even take a sip. Kenneka was glowing. She always did in rooms like that. She didn't even need to try, she just moved different. Confident but sweet. She danced a little, talked to some dude I didn't know, took a few swigs from someone's bottle. I don't think any of us were really watching how much we drank. It wasn't that kind of night. At least, not at first. I remember the moment things started to feel off. It wasn't anything big. Just a weird vibe, like the room suddenly felt colder despite the heat. Kenneka brushed past me to get to the bathroom, and her eyes, they looked kind of glazed. Not tipsy. Not lit. Just vacant. Like she was there, but not really. I grabbed her arm, asked if she was okay. She just nodded. "I'm good, Tash. Just need some air." But she didn't go outside. She just went back to the kitchenette, and I saw her grab her phone. That was the last time I saw her standing steady. The thing is, there were too many people in that damn room. Too many conversations happening at once. Too many unfamiliar faces. I turned away for a few minutes, talked to Bree about this guy she used to mess with, and when I looked back, Ken was gone. Gone. At first, I didn't panic. She was probably just in the bathroom or stepped out to take a call. But 20 minutes passed. Then 30. I texted her. Called. No response. I checked the hallways. The elevator. Nothing. I even asked around and some guy shrugged and said, "I think she left." Left? Without her keys? Without her phone? That didn't sit right with me. By 2:30 a.m., the party started winding down. People leaving. Room trashed. I was pacing the hallway outside, calling her over and over again. Still nothing. I asked the front desk if they'd seen her, and the woman behind the counter just blinked at me like I was crazy. She said security was monitoring the premises and told me to try calling her again. We drove around for a while that night, checked a couple parking lots, the back entrance, even the garage. I remember Bree crying in the back seat, and Moan was quiet, too quiet. Like her brain was trying to keep up with her heart. We didn't sleep. We came back to the hotel the next morning, marched back up to the front desk, and demanded help. Demanded someone check the damn cameras. That's when they said we had to file a missing persons report. That they couldn't release footage without police involvement. Cold. Robotic. Like my best friend wasn't somewhere out there, drunk, alone, and possibly hurt. I filled out that report with hands shaking so hard I could barely hold the pen. It was almost 24 hours before the hotel took it seriously. 24 fucking hours. While Kenneka was somewhere freezing. Dying. Alone. They told us later she was seen on security footage stumbling through the halls. Alone. Bumping into walls. Holding herself up against the side of the freezer area in a section of the hotel that was under renovation. No signs of foul play, they said. No signs? You mean to tell me my best friend just walked into a freezer and died? I didn't buy it then. I don't buy it now. Because I know Kenneka. I knew her heart, her spirit, her strength. She was smart. She wasn't the type to just wander off and get lost. And even if she was that drunk, where were the people who were supposed to be her friends? Where was the staff? The cameras? The damn adults in the room? You don't just end up dead in a freezer by accident. You don't just vanish from a party full of people, and no one sees a goddamn thing. That night didn't just swallow her whole. It swallowed something inside me too. A faith I had in people. In safety. In truth. And from that moment forward, I made a silent promise. I wasn't gonna let the world forget her. I wasn't gonna let them sweep her under the rug and move on. Because Kenneka Jenkins didn't just die that night. She was erased. And I was gonna make sure her name stayed loud. Even if it killed me. Chapter 2. The search, the silence, the screens. The next morning didn't feel real. It felt like we were trapped in some cruel simulation, like our world had tilted just enough to knock all the pieces loose. But nobody else seemed to notice. I hadn't slept. None of us had. I'd been up all night watching my phone, watching the seconds tick by, refreshing my texts, calling Kenneka over and over. Her name sat at the top of my screen like a fucking ghost. No response. No, I'm good. No, I'll be home soon. Just that static silence. Every time it rang out to voicemail, I swear a new kind of fear bloomed in my chest. You know the kind of fear I'm talking about? It's not loud. It's not panic. It's quiet gnawing, like a slow drip of acid wearing a hole in your gut. I told myself over and over again that maybe she was just passed out in someone's room. Maybe she'd turned her phone off. Maybe, but I didn't believe it. Not really. At 8 a.m., we were already back in the hotel parking lot. I remember the sun rising behind the building, casting this warm glow across the cars. But that light didn't touch us. We were sitting in Bree's car, engine idling, windows fogged, eyes bloodshot. I could hear Moan softly crying in the front seat. I didn't even have tears left. I was too fucking angry. Angry at the hotel. Angry at myself. Angry at everyone in that goddamn party who let Kenneka leave alone. We stormed inside again. This time I wasn't asking. I was demanding. I told the front desk Kenneka was missing. That she'd been gone all night. That she hadn't come home, hadn't answered her phone, hadn't posted a damn thing. The woman behind the counter blinked at me, like she was processing code, not pain. You'll need to file a missing persons report, she said calmly, like she was reading from a script. Once we receive that from the police, we can release the footage. My fist clenched so hard I thought I might break my own bones. She's not some runaway teenager, I snapped. She's 19. She was here last night. We know she never left. And you're telling me you can't even look at the fucking cameras? Policy, the woman repeated. Policy. That word has haunted me ever since. Policy let my best friend die. We filed the report. I remember sitting in the Rosemont police station, fluorescent lights buzzing overhead, a clipboard in my lap, and the officer barely looking at me while I tried to put into words what was happening. When did you last see her? What was she wearing? Was she under the influence? Every question felt like a trap. Like they were already building a case, not to find her, but to blame her. I could see it in the way the officer's jaw tightened, in the way his pen slowed when I said, yes, she was drinking. And then the Rayal wait began. Hours dragged by like molasses. The police said they'd reach out to the hotel. said they'd pull footage, said they'd let us know. But no one called. No one came to us. No one seemed to give a damn. So I took matters into my own hands. I started watching everything. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. People were already starting to whisper. Someone had posted a video from the party, a shaky Snapchat, low res, with music blaring in the background. And in the corner, for half a second, there she was. Kenneka, slumped on a bed looking out of it. Not sleepy, drugged. Eyes heavy. Head bobbing. That's when the dread in my stomach turned into something else. Fire. I screenshotted everything. I started a thread. I shared the video. I tagged people. Hashtag find Kenneka. Hashtag where is Kenneka? It started slow. A few shares. A few retweets. Then suddenly it caught fire. By nightfall, people were talking. By midnight, we were viral. Everyone had a theory. Some people blamed the friends. Some said it was organ trafficking. Others swore they saw a shadow in the footage. A man in the mirror behind the bed. Conspiracies poured in like water through a broken dam. But beneath the noise, beneath the madness, there was one truth no one could ignore. She was missing, and the hotel had cameras. We begged for access. The hotel gave us nothing. The police? Silent. So we waited. On Sunday morning, nearly 36 hours after she vanished, the police finally showed us the surveillance footage. They called us into a bland little room in the station, and we sat in metal chairs like we were the ones being interrogated. The screen flickered on. I'll never forget what I saw. Kenneka, stumbling through the hotel hallways. Alone. Her steps unsure. Her arms out slightly like she was trying to balance herself. She bumped into walls. She held herself up by a railing. At one point, she disappeared around a corner and didn't come back. I couldn't breathe. My heart was hammering in my chest, but my body felt cold. Like I'd been dipped in ice water. That's not her, I whispered at first. That can't be her. But it was. That was Kenneka. Wandering. Alone. At one point, the footage showed her pushing open a heavy door at the end of a back hallway. The timestamp read 3:32 a.m. That was the last time she was seen alive. 3 hours later, her body was found. They said she was inside a walk-in freezer, located in an unused kitchen on the lower level of the hotel, a section that was under renovation. The area was supposed to be locked off. The freezer door? Industrial, heavy, difficult to open from the inside. But somehow they said she got in, and never got out. The coroner's report said hypothermia. No signs of trauma. No drugs beyond alcohol, and one epilepsy medication, which they claimed was consistent with over-the-counter usage. They ruled it accidental. But that didn't make sense. Nothing made sense. There were gaps in the footage. Big ones. Whole minutes of missing video. Glitches. Jumps. Parts that showed her entering a hallway, but never leaving it. People who had walked past her earlier that night? Nowhere to be seen. It felt doctored. Manipulated. Edited. The more I watched, the more I knew something was being hidden. And not just from me. From the world. I felt my grief twist into something sharper. I wanted to scream. To break something. To demand truth from every silent mouth that told me accident. I started staying up all night, watching the footage over and over. Frame by frame. Slowing it down. Zooming in. Reading every comment online. Every Reddit thread. Every Facebook Live video. Searching for answers in the pixels. And I wasn't the only one. Within days, the whole internet was doing it too. They were looking into the freezer layout, the temperature settings, the lock mechanisms. People were digging up staff schedules, security logs, blueprints. It was an avalanche of obsession. People who'd never met Kenneka were crying for her, fighting for her, calling out injustice in real time. Hashtag justice for Kenneka trended worldwide. But you know who didn't say much? The hotel. And the police. They stuck to their story. Accidental death. Case closed. But for me, that was when it all began. Because I wasn't just looking for answers anymore. I was looking for truth, the kind they bury under layers of policy and silence. The kind they hope will get tired of chasing. But I'm not tired. I'm furious. And Kenneka's face haunts me every night. Frozen in that last frame, walking toward a door that should have never been open. A door that swallowed her whole. Chapter 3, A Body in the Cold. They always talk about closure like it's some kind of finish line. But the truth is, sometimes closure just means accepting that the nightmare is real. There's a moment you don't come back from. A moment where the world splits open, where sound disappears, where the weight of what you feared becomes too real to outrun. I lived in that moment the day they told us they found her. It was early Sunday afternoon, and we were still in the hotel lobby when the news hit. I had just come back from outside, where I'd been pacing the curb for hours, calling her mom again and again, begging for answers no one had. The air was thick with September heat, but my body had gone cold. Numb. It was like every part of me already knew what was coming. The manager came out, nervous, pale, eyes darting like he wanted to be anywhere but here. Two officers stood beside him. One of them was holding a radio, the other a clipboard. I didn't even wait for them to speak. I saw it on their faces. No, I said. No, don't fucking say it. Don't say it. But they did. She's been found, one of the officers said quietly. In a freezer. In the lower level kitchen. It appears she entered it herself. I remember laughing. Can you believe that? I actually fucking laughed. Not because anything was funny. Because the words didn't make sense. It felt like a bad dream that had taken a nosedive into full-blown absurdity. A freezer? I repeated, stepping forward. You're telling me my best friend, who went missing in your hotel almost 2 days ago, is dead in a freezer? That no one thought to check before now. That no one heard her. They didn't answer. Because what the fuck could they say? We weren't allowed to see her. Not right away. They said the scene had to be secured. Evidence collected. The coroner notified. All the official shit that suddenly became a priority after they let her body sit in a freezing tomb for hours, maybe days, without action. The hotel was crawling with uniforms now, but it was too late. I imagined her in there. Alone. Cold. In the dark. Her breath slowing. Her skin numbing. Her heart struggling to hold on. I imagined her calling out, maybe at first with words, and then just with sounds. Scratching the walls. Knocking. Praying someone might hear. And I imagine the silence she must have heard back. The image ripped something inside me. We sat on the floor of the lobby, holding each other. Mon was shaking. Bree had her face buried in her hands. I couldn't cry. My tears had dried up somewhere between rage and horror. Her mother arrived an hour later and screamed in a way I've never heard before. It wasn't just grief. It was witnessing your worst fear made flesh. That scream, that sound, still visits me at night. Later that evening, the police released more information. The freezer was located in a back kitchen area on the lower level. A section of the hotel that wasn't being used. No lights. No staff. A place guests weren't supposed to be. So how the hell did Kenneka get there? They showed us stills from the security footage. Grainy, low-res frames of her stumbling through empty hallways. Her head down. Her balance off. Her arms flailing a little, like she was swatting away something invisible. There was no one else in the frame. She appears intoxicated, one of the officers explained. Our working theory is that she became disoriented, entered the unused kitchen, and accidentally locked herself in. That word again. Accident. They threw it around like it was some magic eraser. Like it could undo all the unanswered questions. Like it could clean the blood off their hands. I couldn't accept it. I refused to. You don't accidentally find your way into a secured kitchen on a restricted floor. You don't accidentally open an industrial freezer door in total darkness. And you sure as hell don't accidentally die while an entire hotel pretends not to notice. I started asking more questions. Who had access to that area? Why weren't there alarms? Why was the freezer even on? Why didn't anyone hear her if she screamed? And that's when I started realizing how deep the silence really ran. The hotel refused to comment further. Security staff gave vague, robotic responses. Even the police started dodging us, claiming the case was under investigation, but offering no new information. Online, the story had already gone viral. Social media was ablaze with speculation. Some people were posting screenshots from the surveillance videos. Others were sharing theories about what might have happened, rape, trafficking, murder. There were videos claiming to hear voices in the background, to see shadows that shouldn't be there. I didn't know what to believe anymore. But I knew this, none of it sat right. None of it felt like the whole story. I kept watching the security footage over and over, frame by frame. Every time I noticed something new. A jump cut here. A missing timestamp there. Blurry figures. Hallways that should have had camera coverage, suddenly blacked out. It felt like the story had been chopped up, edited, reconstructed. Manufactured. And the deeper I fell into that rabbit hole, the more I realized I wasn't alone. Thousands of people online were watching too. Investigating. Picking the footage apart, comparing audio, mapping the layout of the hotel. Some of it got crazy, sure, but some of it made sense. Too much sense to ignore. One post pointed out that the freezer had a safety latch inside. that it was nearly impossible to get trapped unless you were locked in. Another post claimed the footage had a 2-minute gap, right around the time she disappeared. Suddenly, this wasn't just a tragedy. It was a conspiracy. I still remember the first time I saw the autopsy report. Hypothermia. No obvious signs of trauma. Blood alcohol level consistent with intoxication. One epilepsy drug found in her system, topiramate, but she didn't have epilepsy. And we didn't know her to be taking that medication. Where did it come from? How did it get in her system? They said the amount wasn't enough to kill her, but it could have amplified the effects of alcohol. Made her more confused. More vulnerable. That was their narrative. Drunk. Disoriented. Lost. But if that's all it was, why hide so much? Why redact parts of the report? Why withhold so many frames of footage? Why wait so long to check the cameras? Why wasn't the kitchen locked? Why didn't anyone help her? The questions gnawed at me. They still do. I stood outside that hotel the night after they found her. The building glowed soft and sterile behind me while candles lit up the sidewalk like stars on concrete. People came, dozens of them, holding signs, praying, chanting her name, Kenneka Jenkins. The girl who walked into a party and never came home. The girl they tried to erase with silence. We lit candles. We cried. We screamed. We demanded truth. But the cold truth? She died alone. And someone let it happen. And no matter how they spun it, no matter how many press conferences they held, or how many times they said accident, that truth will never sit right in my soul. Because I know her. And I know damn well she didn't just die. She was failed. By friends. By staff. By the system. By everyone. And I promised her. I promised myself. I wouldn't stop until someone answered for it. Even if no one wanted to. Chapter 4. Viral Truths Buried Lies. When the people meant to protect you go quiet, the internet screams louder. I stopped sleeping. Not because I didn't want to. Because I couldn't. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw her. Kenneka. Frozen in my memory, lost in that hallway, shoulders slumped forward. That last blurry security camera frame, flickering like a bad omen on repeat in my mind. There were nights I forgot to eat. Days I barely moved from my spot on the couch, hunched over my laptop. Phone in one hand, charger never unplugged, my thumb raw from scrolling. Grief doesn't just live in your chest, it eats you whole. Turns your brain inside out. But in my case, grief had a sidekick. Obsession. It started with one question. Why wasn't there more footage? And then that question gave birth to another. Why didn't they release it all? And soon I had hundreds, thousands, all screaming at once in the back of my skull like sirens I couldn't shut off. But I wasn't alone. Social media had become an echo chamber for our grief. What started with a hashtag, #JusticeForKenneka, erupted into a movement. Videos flooded Facebook. Threads exploded on Twitter. TikToks began dissecting everything from the hotel floor plan to the timeline gaps. YouTube sleuths, strangers from across the world, became digital detectives fueled by anger, empathy, and the same burning disbelief that had set fire to my life. Some were wild, sure. People zoomed in on blurry reflections in sunglasses, claimed they heard screams in background music. Others froze frames mid-video, swearing they saw hands dragging her, claiming her friends were in on it. The conspiracies were endless. But even through the chaos, some of it made sense. Let me tell you what we started to piece together. According to official statements, Kenneka left the party alone around 3:20 a.m. The footage shows her in the lobby, stumbling through an empty kitchen hallway. Then nothing. Just gone. For over an hour, the timeline goes dark. No footage of her entering the kitchen. No video of her opening the freezer. Just a jump from her walking alone to her being found inside that industrial steel box. But what people noticed, the ones who spent hours frame by frame analyzing the footage, was that several chunks of time were missing. Redacted. Skipped. There were time codes that made no sense. Cameras that were supposedly running 24/7 that magically glitched right when she passed through. Coincidence? Nah, I didn't believe that anymore. One user, at Kyrak Truths, posted a side-by-side video of the hallway Kenneka disappeared into, compared to footage taken by another guest months earlier. The layout was the same, but the freezer door was missing in the recent footage. Blurred out. Cropped, maybe. Another sleuth pulled floor plans from the hotel's fire inspection permits and highlighted how the path she walked should have had 4 working cameras. Yet only 2 were released. And you want to know the kicker? The footage that was released. It was edited. Zoomed in. Cropped. It didn't even include the raw audio. No ambient noise. No footsteps, no doors creaking, just a silent ghost of a girl walking toward her death. People began creating maps, reenacting her last steps in videos, calling out the inconsistencies. One post went viral. It was a breakdown of the time delay between when she disappeared from the camera and when she was found. 21 hours. Kenneka lay in that freezer for almost an entire day before they even looked. That wasn't negligence. That was criminal. And while all of this stormed online, you know what the hotel did? They locked down, issued a brief statement expressing their deep condolences, said they were cooperating fully with the investigation, and went right back to business. They didn't shut the place down. They didn't call for an internal inquiry. They didn't offer transparency. They moved on, like she was just a name, a glitch in their schedule, another line in their press packet. And the police? Same story. They doubled down on their ruling, accidental death, no foul play, end of story. And they said it with this rehearsed calmness, like we were all just hysterical conspiracy theorists, like our grief made us delusional. But you know what? Maybe grief is delusional. Maybe it does turn you into something different. Sharper. Hungrier. Because when no one gives you the truth, you go digging for it yourself. And I dug deep. I started messaging people anonymously, guests who'd been at the hotel that night, staff who were off duty but might have heard something. One young woman, I'll call her Dee, said she'd seen Kenneka in the elevator around 1:30 a.m., talking to a man who didn't match any known witness descriptions. She said she felt weird vibes and left before things got out of hand. Another man messaged me anonymously, claiming he worked part-time security and had heard things, but said he was too scared to talk. Why? Because the hotel allegedly told staff not to talk to media, or anyone, about what happened. That wasn't just negligence. That was a cover-up. And the more the hotel stayed silent, the louder we became. News stations started circling. Blogs wrote think pieces about surveillance and race, about how young black women go missing and the world barely blinks. They called Kenneka the ghost of room 926. Protesters lined the hotel entrance with candles and cardboard signs. People chanted her name while guests awkwardly walked past dragging luggage. Some hotel guests complained. One even said the protests were bad for business. You know what's bad for business? Letting a teenager die in your building and doing nothing. I started getting threats. DMs calling me a liar. Emails saying I was making things worse for her family. One even said, "Drop it, or you'll end up like her." I showed it to the cops. You think they did anything? Of course not. They said it was probably just internet noise. Noise. They called it noise. As if this was just static on a broken radio. As if my friend's death was just another hashtag on a timeline that would fade when something more viral came along. But it didn't fade. It burned. And I was right there in the center of the blaze. I started uploading my own videos, on Instagram, TikTok, anywhere that would host me. I told people what it was like to be there, what it felt like to lose her, what the footage didn't show. I posted stills from the footage framed side by sides, pointed out timestamps, circled inconsistencies. My voice shook in those early videos. But by week two, I was steady, focused. Because this wasn't just a story. It was a battle. Me versus silence. Us versus the system. Kenneka's death had become something bigger than just one tragedy. It had become a symbol, a mirror reflecting the ugly truth of how easy it is for black girls to vanish. How quickly they get blamed for their own deaths. How often justice gets swallowed by bureaucracy and policy. People were listening now. But the hotel? Still mute. The cops? Still hiding behind their press releases. And the world? Still divided. Some believed us. Some mocked us. But none of them were there that night. None of them heard the way her mother screamed when they told her. None of them sat through the surveillance footage, feeling their own heart stop every time she stumbled past another corner. None of them saw the freezer. But I did. And I felt it. This wasn't over. Not by a long shot. Because even if they never reopened the case, even if they never told the truth, even if the whole damn world tried to forget her, I wouldn't. And neither would the internet. Chapter 5, Justice in the Shadows. Not all ghosts scream. Some whisper. Some leave behind silence so loud it drowns everything else. Years have passed since the night Kenneka died. And still I feel her. Sometimes I hear her laugh in the back of my mind, soft and playful, like it used to echo through my bedroom when we stayed up watching corny movies and sharing secrets we swore no one else would ever know. Other times, I see her in places she's never been, reflected in rearview mirrors, walking through crowds, frozen in photographs she never took. But most days, I just miss her. And I hate that even after all this time, I still don't have the kind of closure people talk about. I don't have a grave I can visit without feeling like I failed her. I don't have peace. All I have is truths buried in shadows. Whispers that no one wants to hear. Questions no one wants to answer. After the protests faded and the hashtags slowed, after the blogs moved on to the next scandal and the camera crews packed up, after the city fell silent again, we kept fighting. But the world, it got tired. And I watched that happen in real time. I watched as headlines stopped printing her name. As the investigation was officially closed with the final ruling, accidental death due to hypothermia and alcohol intoxication. I watched as the Rosemont police issued a press release, their words robotic and final. No evidence of foul play. No suspects. No further investigation. It was like they slammed a lid over the truth and buried it 6 feet deep. And just like that, we were supposed to move on. But how do you move on when your best friend froze to death in a place that should have been locked? Supervised? Safe? How do you move on when you know, there's more they're not telling you? For a while, I tried to fight it through the system. I contacted lawyers, advocates, civil rights groups. I sent letters, emails, created petitions. I gathered thousands of signatures. I wrote to every journalist who had once covered the case, begging them to dig deeper, to not let this die. Most didn't answer. Some said they'd already covered it enough. But one, just one, called me back. A freelance reporter named Alondra Morales. She was young, fire in her voice, the kind of person who didn't blink when I told her the whole ugly story. She came to Chicago that summer with nothing but a beat-up Canon camera, a laptop, and a notebook full of questions. She stayed for 3 weeks, interviewed me, Kenneka's mom, the hotel's former employees. She filed FOIA requests for security logs and audio transcripts. She traced the blueprints of the freezer area. Alondra didn't promise me justice, but she promised me attention. And that sometimes is the first crack in the wall. She released a documentary on YouTube, Frozen Silence, the Kenneka Jenkins story. It was raw, gritty, real. Nothing polished, just the story told the way it was meant to be, by the people who lived it. And it exploded. The views jumped into the millions within a week. Suddenly, the internet remembered. TikTok creators began reposting footage breakdowns. Reddit spun up new theories. Twitter lit back up with hashtag justice for Kenneka. And once again, her name was loud. Not forgotten. Loud. That pressure forced movement. It took 6 years, but in 2023, the Jenkins family filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the Crown Plaza Hotel and its security firm. 6 years of silence. And finally, a crack. The trial didn't go public right away. It was private. Quiet. The hotel tried to get it dismissed, but the judge denied the motion. Depositions started. Lawyers on both sides began to talk. And then something incredible happened. They settled. $6 million. That was the price they paid to shut it all down. But don't get it twisted. That settlement wasn't justice. It wasn't an admission of guilt. It wasn't truth. It was hush money, legal silence painted as compassion. It was them saying, let's put this behind us, while never saying, we were wrong. But for her family, it was something. A start. They used that money to start a foundation in her name, the Kenneka Jenkins Awareness Initiative, focused on safety standards in hotels, surveillance transparency, and advocacy for missing Black girls. They funded community centers, sponsored campaigns. Her mom turned pain into power, the kind of strength that only grows from losing everything. And me, I stayed with it. I kept talking, kept writing, kept going to every interview, every vigil, every anniversary. I wasn't the same girl I was in 2017. That Tasha died in the lobby of that hotel, screaming, begging for help, and being met with a blank stare. The version that survived, she's sharper now, fiercer. And she doesn't forget, because I remember how the hotel took 21 hours to find her. I remember how they treated us like we were exaggerating. I remember the cold, the silence, the way they edited her life into four blurry frames and called it a conclusion. I remember the press conference where they said she walked into that freezer on her own, and the way that phrase repeated like a curse, on her own, on her own. But Kenneka wasn't alone. She had us. She has us. And she always will. Sometimes I walk past that hotel, and I see people checking in, smiling, dragging their bags clueless. I want to scream, to stand on the sidewalk with a megaphone and remind the world what this place is. What it cost us, But I don't. I just watch. Quietly. Because the loudest revenge isn't always noise. Sometimes it's legacy. Sometimes it's memory. Sometimes it's making damn sure that a girl they tried to silence becomes a name they can never erase. And if justice never came through the courts, if no one was ever arrested, if the tapes never got unedited, if the answers never reached daylight, then let this be justice. Let her name be louder than their excuses. Let the truth, our truth, live longer than their lies. Because Kenneka Jenkins didn't die in vain. She became a movement, a spark, a sister none of us will ever stop marching for. And every time I see her face, on murals, on hoodies, in candlelight vigils, I remember. The freezer didn't win. Silence didn't win. We're still here. And we're still screaming.